Who let the dogs out?
Who let the dogs out?
Who let the dogs out?
It is time for Pet Files. Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine. 518-789-3440, MillertonVet.com. With us today, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief vet at the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Hello, Dr. Cannon.
Hello, Jill. How are you?
We are well. I am speaking now for Dan and Jessica in Millerton, and they are asking, Arcana Corso is pregnant with her first litter. We just got the notification that she's due for rabies and distemper booster shots. Is there a safety issue out there? And if so, should we wait until she's fully weaned?
My recommendation is not to vaccinate her while she's pregnant. The modified live vaccines can cause some harm, and a rabies vaccine, which isn't modified live, it's killed, could cause a reaction that could cause a fever and cause her to abort potentially. So not a good idea to vaccinate during pregnancy. It's a really, really good idea to vaccinate prior to. So a vaccine titer is an antibody level, and it tells you in the blood how many antibodies you have that would be not only protective to the female dog who's having the puppies, but also passed along to the puppies through the uterus and through the colostrum, which is the first milk that they drink. And you can actually, if you've got a pregnant female and you don't know about her antibody levels, you could go take her in and have a blood draw, and it could be sent to see how she's doing as far as her own antibody levels. Because if she's got nice high antibodies, especially for canine distemper, adenovirus, and especially for parvovirus, then, and she has a normal birth and she nurses the puppies nicely, then, you know, you can expect that they're going to most likely have a good protective antibody. And then you could vaccinate her, you know, towards the end of her nursing period.
Would you need to if her titers were high?
We won't need to if her titers are high. I'm sorry. I'm thinking.
Yeah, you're thinking ahead of yourself, which I understand.
I'm thinking ahead of myself. Yes, because vaccination. If she did need to be vaccinated, again, it's not going to hurt her. It's not going to hurt the puppies if you vaccinate her while she's nursing. But it's possible that she could have a reaction and then dry up her milk, and then you have all these puppies to feed. So it's not a good idea to vaccinate during nursing either.
So can I be a civilian who spent some time in California growing up as I, and then came back? Yeah, and then came back east and got lost some of my stuff that I'm now. One of the most interesting tools in the toolbox that people have and don't realize, by and large, because they're not maybe more and more vets are recommending titers, but I remember hearing about it and being really curious about why that wasn't an option that was offered. You know, it's like if you can have chive sauce with your filet of sole, why can't you be offered the option of a titer instead of just, you know, slamming vaccines into these mm-hmm. creatures that may or may not, you know, more and more research has been done, let's just say. So first question, is it more commonplace to offer titers now?
Very much so.
Okay. So
very much so. And in fact, that can be done during pregnancy. So it's just drawing blood and sending them out. And so if, in fact, you know, the female has a good antibody titer, then you don't have to be so concerned about the puppies, especially parvovirus.
Question would be if she doesn't.
If she doesn't, then what you need to do is really lower the risk of exposure for those puppies when they're born. And if you're running a breeding facility, I probably wouldn't even whelp them in the breeding facility. Get them out of the facility if you've had any puppies with parvo before. you know, if she's running a low titer. But my guess is that that's probably not the case, since it's probably not a breeding facility, since these people don't know about, you know, the question comes from people who don't know about
titers.
Vaccinating prior to breeding. That's the best thing to do, is to make sure that your dog's well vaccinated prior to breeding, and you might even want a titer prior to breeding to make sure that the titer's nice and high, and then go ahead and breed, and you're pretty well protected then.
Right. Okay, so that's obviously that's obviously the step that didn't happen.
Yeah. Okay. So titers now is a great idea. Then at least you know if your breeding bitch is low in antibodies to parvo, you have to be super, super careful, not let anyone in and out to see your puppies, and get them vaccinated early. So vaccinating them maybe even at 4 weeks of age.
All right, but at least you have there's a game plan that you can follow based on that information.
Exactly. And the reason that we vaccinate later at 8 weeks is because we don't want interference from the maternal antibody, which can negate the vaccine. So if you know that mom doesn't have much antibody, she's not going to pass much to the puppies, then you can vaccinate younger. Right. So it's a discussion to have with your vet.
All makes sense. Starting with the basic building block of, hey, titer. All right. Jen in Brooklyn, my dog used to finish her dinner and then happily rest. Once in a blue moon, usually after strenuous exercise, she'd pace around restlessly after eating until I gave her an extra spoonful or two of food. For the past month or so, she's been doing this every time, unless I put an extra big portion in her bowl to begin with. I got her one of those dishes that slow them down. That didn't help. She doesn't have parasites. She's not getting fat. How would I know if it was a blood sugar problem versus something purely behavioral? Could it just be the cold weather causing her to burn more calories? She is a 6-year-old cowboy corgi in seemingly good health.
So to address this, I think the first thing I think of is that with a dog who's pacing after eating, it sounds like she's not uncomfortable then. She just wants more food, because my assumption here is that when she's fed an extra big portion, she then is not pacing around. So clearly she's not uncomfortable after getting enough food. That's the assumption that I'm making going forward, and that she doesn't have parasites because at least a couple of stool samples have been checked. And if that's the case, then, yeah, she sounds like she's hungry because she's not getting enough calories, maybe. I'm wondering if she is looking like she's getting thin. Certainly a fasting blood glucose would be something to check. So fasting her, don't feed her anything for 10 hours or so, and get some blood drawn. So absolutely, probably with that fasting glucose, I would do a fasted whole blood panel, just to make sure that there's nothing else going on. If she's not maybe absorbing the food as well as she did, maybe she's not chewing it well enough, it's a great idea to use one of those dishes, even if it's not helping a great deal, use the kind of dish that slows down the food, the eating process. It could be cold weather, too, and I would say if she's not gaining weight, go ahead and feed her more, but have your veterinarian check out why that might be. And, a physical exam and a blood panel is a good idea. You don't want to wait until she looks like she's ribby and her spine sticking out and then say, gee, I wonder what's going on here. So be sure to have more than one stool sample checked, maybe even a prophylactic deworming depending on her lifestyle, and talk to the vet about some blood work and an exam.
All right. And you are discounting cold weather causing to burn more calories? Is that not...
No, I'm not discounting that. But I can tell you that most of the patients that I've been seeing in the last month, almost all of them have gained weight over the winter.
Right.
So the cold weather, you know, maybe this is a super, super active dog. I know that people in Brooklyn tend to get out there no matter what. You get out there and walk in the park, whatever, wherever. So it's possible that she's getting as much exercise as she does in the summertime. So in which case, the cold weather, she might be working harder to keep herself in adequate calories Absolutely. But it's not something I see that often.
How do you add calories just to, for those that you don't see that often? For those that go the other way?
How do you add calories?
Yes, yeah, safely.
Feed more food.
Just more food.
Yeah, I wouldn't have them change anything.
Okay.
Just feed more of what you're feeding.
Okay. Frida in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Help, I am an ear mite hell. Whole litter of kittens have them, and they just keep passing them around and around to each other. How do I get off this treadmill once and for all? I don't know. Please advise. Kittens are 6 weeks going on 7.
So the best thing to do is make sure that you're treating them all at the same time and continue to treat them all at the same time until you don't see symptoms in any of them. I don't know what you've treated with, but my recommendation would be to use something like Revolution, Selamectin. There's a generic Revolution product out there. That is putting something topically on. Now, I think that Revolution can be applied anytime after 4 weeks of age. Certainly 6 weeks would be okay. But double check with your vet, because I don't have it right in front of me. Revolution is one of those topicals that helps with fleas, that prevents fleas, but it also has some effectiveness against mange and very good against ear mites. So if you were to apply it to all the kittens, then you should have dead mites on all of them so that you're not getting them passed back and forth. And then you go ahead and clean the environment. Mites don't like to live off of animals for very long, but they can live on the dander if you've got dead skin all over the place. So you really need to clean the whole environment with lots of washing, soap and water on the floors, or vacuuming like mad. Presumably little tiny kittens wouldn't have the run of the house, so hopefully this would be doable. So you would apply the Revolution and then clean, and then, you know, every few days do a really good cleaning so that we don't get mites dropped off in the environment, and make sure mom is treated as well.
All right. That, hopefully, how long should that take to just get
everybody
clean?
Usually it's 2 treatments. So
okay.
good question. So these kittens are probably going to be ready to go soon. So I would treat them. Treat them, make sure that you tell the people who they're going to that they have had ear mites but they've been treated so that they can be checked by each person's veterinarian. I like to make sure that the ears, once they've been treated, that the thick, crusty gunk in the ears is cleaned out so that there's not any mites sort of in the midst of that gunk, if that's a good word. And
very medical,
and,
very scientific.
And that they're not going to infect the environment that they're going to. But again, usually they're passed directly. And sometimes what happens is when you're treating topically, you're treating medication down inside the ear, but there are some ear mites left on the skin in front of the ear. Sometimes they'll even lose hair there. And so that's why I say Revolution, which will treat them in the skin, in the ear, everywhere.
Okay. And is it 2 weeks between?
So you would repeat it in 2 weeks,
okay.
And then so in a month they should be completely clear.
And as you say, they'll be gone. So, but that's okay. At least you won't feel guilty.
Yes, as long as you tell the
right.
You tell the people that this is what's going on.
They have been treated.
Yeah, keep them separate from your other cats until you go to the vet and get the ears cleaned and retreat them
right.
in 2 weeks.
And probably along the same lines, Kevin in Waterbury, I'm 100% sure my cat has tapeworm, and I bought a dewormer. Excuse me. But according to the ASPCA website, you shouldn't use over-the-counter dewormer for your cat. Do I really have to take him to the vet for it?
So I'm making an assumption here is that the 100% sure means that you're seeing the tapeworms.
Let's go with that.
Okay. So if you're seeing the tapeworm segments under the tail, you might see them little live segments crawl out of the anus. You might see tapeworm segments on the perineum, which is the area around the anus. They look like little tiny, tiny pieces of rice. Usually they're dried up, and they're a yellow, off-white or yellow in color. So what you need to do is 2 things. You need to treat with a dewormer that's going to kill all types of tapeworm, and you need to do, you have to change the situation that caused the tapeworm, if you can. So tapeworms come from through an intermediate host, always. They can't come directly from one animal to the other. And so if one of your cats is licking the cat that has the tapeworm, they're not going to get tapeworms from that. They're going to get them from either the fleas that live on the cat or from eating rodents. So if the rodent issue may be difficult to control, but definitely make sure that all the pets in your household are treated for fleas to prevent that from happening again. But, you know, I think my answer to this is yes, I would take your cat to the vet, make sure that they, not only that they do definitely have tapeworms, but that they're tested for other worms as well, so that you can give a broad spectrum dewormer with praziquantel in it, which would take care of the tapeworms and other things.
All right. I just wonder what I have, not looking at the website, I wonder whether it's not clear, you know, just that of the different types of wormings.
I don't usually check the internet. I'm not really sure. But, you know, it's a good idea. You're talking about a parasite.
And it's, no pun intended, it's a pain in the ass. So
there
just,
you go.
You just, yes, go to the vet, because you don't really know what's in that dewormer.
If you've been seen recently, it's possible that you could just bring a stool sample, check for the other parasites, and your veterinarian might go ahead and dispense the dewormer for you. So hopefully that's the case, and you wouldn't need to make the visit. But if you haven't been there in a year, then you got to go in.
Right. Okay. Sam from Sharon, I just moved from a house to an apartment, and my 5-year-old dachshund Charlie has been barking all day while me and my fiancé are at work. I didn't factor in that having windows on a busy street, relatively, would cause such a reaction from her. I feel terrible for Charlie, but especially for my neighbors. Please help.
Sam. That is really difficult. It's a difficult situation, and I'm glad that that this person has recognized how difficult it is for Charlie, too. So the best thing to do would be to keep her from being able to look out the windows. So, you know, if she's not crate trained, that's what you're going to need to do. I suspect if you put window coverings over, she's just going to paw at them and pull them down if she's that worked up. So, you know, if she can get up on the back of the couch and look out the windows, I'm assuming. Otherwise, she wouldn't be seeing people out there.
I don't know. Dachshunds aren't exactly long-legged. She must be able to levitate.
Either low windows or high couches. So, you know, putting her either in a room for her crate in the back of the house where she might actually scratch at the door. You know, dachshunds are good diggers. Or doing a crate training in a positive way so that she gets everything she loves when she goes into the crate. Leaving her with things that she can chew on, like a Kong, when you leave the house, to entertain her a little bit, and getting her plenty of exercise, because she'll be in the crate when you're at work. Talk to your veterinarian about something to calm her if she is pretty hysterical in the crate. But, you know, there's no simple answer for this. Drugs are not going to do it alone, because the inciting cause is still there. So you have to make environmental changes. If you've got a room in the back of the house, maybe, where she could get up and look out the window and it doesn't look at the street, or back of the apartment, where she doesn't look at the street, that might be a way to do it. And then put a plastic guard on the bottom of your door, because she's going to scratch the heck out of it. You have to think of inventive ways. But the use of anti-anxiety medication, as long as you're making environmental changes, makes sense for the first 2 or 3 months.
But as with humans, you know, you have to make the... I just threw that in. But it's fine to carry on, but if you are not making the life changes or the environmental changes, then you are not completely solving the problem.
Right. You won't be successful with your drugs.
Right. All right. Abad in Buffalo. My Bichon Frise walked over some of those ice melt pellets, and now her paw pads seem to hurt her. Abad, that happened to me, and it wasn't a Bichon Frise. I washed them off when we got home and rubbed some coconut oil on them. I didn't see anything and still don't, but that was yesterday, and she's acting like they still hurt. Do I have to go to the vet? Also, is there some way to tell by looking when I'm out on the streets which ice melt is the bad kind and which is safe? It is quite an obstacle course out there. Abad, I happen to agree with you, and I don't live in Buffalo anymore.
Yeah, that's a difficult situation. The only way, there really aren't any that are super safe. The ones that are the safest would be something made from propylene glycol and urea. The problem being is that the urea really isn't effective at melting the ice. So if you walk in the snow would be the best way to do it. Any place where you see that the ice hasn't melted would be the place to walk. But getting, you know, if you've got a small dog, picking up your dog and taking him to the park, someplace where they're not putting ice melt on would be an option. Probably not a good one if you're just going outside to have them take a pee before you go to work. But if you're doing that and it's a short walk, there's less exposure. So the paws get irritated with repeated or prolonged exposure to these ice melts. They're all chlorides. There's calcium chloride, potassium chloride, sodium chloride, which is salt. They put in a form of rock salt, which melts the ice really well, but can make dogs really sick if they lick their paws or walk in it. Magnesium chloride isn't that much better. The chloride is what's irritating to the paws. So if it says paws are pet safe, they're not really, any of them, really pet safe. So washing off those feet. You know, if you're going out for a short period of time, you go back in and wash the feet really well. Under the running water in the sink, even with a little doggy shampoo, is a good idea, and dry them well. And then you will limit exposure. You have to make sure that they don't lick any of it when you're out, and they don't lick their paws when you get home. So, you know, that's a great idea. If you've got a dog who can wear boots, terrific, to protect the bottoms of their feet until they get to the park, or carry them until they get to the park, would be good. Or there is something called pet wax or musher's wax that you can put on the bottoms of their feet. You know, it's a lot of work. You get the musher's wax on, and then you get all the stuff stuck in the musher's wax, and then you have to remove it when you get home, kind of wiping it off, certainly wiping any material that's stuck in it.
I'm personally not a fan, although, you know, it seemed like a really good idea at the time. This year I happened to have a new one, and that was that the dog would walk in the snow, first walk on the salt, then walk in the snow, then have the snow melt on his paws, and then lick it, and then get really sick.
Oh, no.
Yeah, just really, really acid. The acid was just incredible.
Diarrhea and vomiting. Diarrhea and vomiting when they ingest too much of it.
Yeah, the licking, that sad look and that licking and the, you know, I need a Bromo-Seltzer look. And I just, it was almost a rinse and repeat situation. Like, I couldn't break the cycle. So I was really particularly sympathetic. The only difference is I think that, you know, safest, easiest is you can lift up, and if you wipe off, can you use like dishwashing? Can you use just warm water, or do you need to put
as far as cleaning the salt?
Wiping paws. Let's just say you've got to run the dog out for a quick pee before work.
Mm-hmm.
You can carry the dog to where she would like to pee, and then can you rub her, can you wash off her paws easily, or is it a production?
Yeah, I mean, you can. If you've got a big dog, yeah, use a washcloth and get the salt off, and then use a towel. Right. Most people who have dogs in the winter, they've got the pile of dog towels.
That is so. All right, guess what? We used up all that time really fast. Thank you so much, Dr. Cannon. This has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com.
Who let the dogs out? Who, 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 who? Who let the dogs out? Who, 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 who?